Welcome to the Venus Index podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Ali Scott, and we're going to be talking about something that keeps coming up in the forum about sabotage point. And I've noticed I actually have this the same thing. I called it something else. I called it the good enough point, but you guys seem to be calling it sabotage point. So either way, it's the same concept. And Ali's experienced it too, and it might hit for different people at a different point and based on experience. Even my sister ran into something similar. And the concept, from what I'm gathering, is when we get to a body weight that we're – or body look, shape, size, weight that we're actually relatively comfortable with, maybe in clothes, and we start to lose, I don't know, maybe a bit of motivation to push any further. And I don't know. It might be a collection of external factors like social feedback, like the social circles you run in, how you compare to other people, things that change in your life that kind of take the pressure off to actually go any further. It seems to be slightly different for different people. It may also be that you get to a point that that you're familiar with from before, so you just kind of remember being at that point, so you don't think to go any further. Whatever reason, everyone seems to have a point that's sort of going past it. The difficulty seems to go up or something, and it's not a physical thing. It's not like you're physically – it's actually any harder. It's just that psychologically and socially, it seems maybe there's less motivation to push past it. There's another thing that happens as we lose weight and get leaner, that the results themselves, like markers of things like body weight and the look in the mirror, it may not happen as fast. Like when there's more weight to lose, it comes off a bit faster, but towards the end, it comes off a bit slower. So it also may be that as that kind of rate of change slows down, it starts to seem like more work. So this seems to be happening to a lot of people. There's this convergence point where getting to it seems to be one thing, and then getting past it is a different thing. And from what I can gather, it's almost all a psychological and social event at that point. It's not actually anything on your body has actually changed. It's the feedback is changing. So the work put in seems to feel like more work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it does make sense. I mean, we all hit a point where the one thing you and I have talked about is where you look different in clothes. And you hit a point where you stop looking different in clothes. It's a little bit different for women because we wear skin-tight clothing all the time. But still, the last pound or two are really, it's going to come in your muscle definition and not necessarily your size, which is why John's always said that the last few pounds, sometimes you won't even lose any inches. You can be at your Venus Index and then still lose a little bit of weight, and mostly just comes in the muscle definition, and that's not going to show up through clothes. So sometimes you hit a point where that's kind of as good as you're going to look in clothes, and then it's really difficult to decide to take the next pound or two off because you're going to stop getting social feedback. People are still going to look at you the same way. Almost no one will be able to tell, which is kind of why it's neat to do a contest or an after pic in a bikini or something so close to it, where you can really see the work that you've put into your body.
Yeah, so for guys, we call it shirt on big and shirt off big. So guys, and so for girls, it would be clothes shape or bikini shape. So it's the difference between how I mean, you know, like you were saying, you go from a size 6 to a 4 to a 2 or whatever. And then, but once you're in a 2, you know, because you're so small, you can be in a 2 but still have a bit to go to be bikini ready. But you can't tell in clothes. And for guys, it's the same thing. Guys, as they get leaner, you know, they have this – we have the reverse psychology. We're worried about going from an extra large to a large to a medium shirt. But that's because we're starting to wear more form-fitting shirts. But then you take the shirt off and there's all the muscle and all the definition. You're like, oh, but with a shirt on, guys have this complex. You're like, well, I'm only in a medium. So I'm assuming it's the same for girls. There's the – how you look in your clothes, then there's how you kind of look, I guess, without your clothes. And that's the difference at the end, at least for one of the, quote, sabotage points, is the fact that, like Ali said, nothing changes. Like, you're already in the size you want to be in. You could be almost right on your Venus Index, but still could change the actual look, but the look won't be something visible in clothes. And that's one of the points. I think the other point That's one of the sabotage points. And the other point could be when you go from being having the spotlight on you as being overweight or being at a body size that you think maybe socially eyes are on you for like the wrong reasons. I don't know if that sounds right, but because you're not in the, you know, normal BMI range, let's say. And then at some point, as you're losing weight and you're building momentum, you go from being physically maybe big for your size to normal for your size. And now you're, for lack of a better way of saying it, kind of blending into the crowd. You're not visibly bigger than anybody. You're just sort of normal. So now all of a sudden the spotlight's not on you anymore. That could also be a sabotage point where it's comfortable to be anonymous, so to speak. And then the next stage is having the spotlight turned back on you as a Venus, because now all of a sudden the spotlight's back on you as the sort of most in shape person at the table. So it's, I think some people actually are afraid to have that spotlight turned back on them, because at somewhere psychologically that may also be now you're going to be held accountable to that, because you've gone from being, let's say, overweight to normal weight to now in great shape. And that's asking for attention again. And maybe it's a scary idea to be like, whoa, I've just redefined myself not only as just normal, but now I'm redefining myself as one of the people with the best figures at this table. Do I have to hold myself to that for the rest of my life? I can see how that's a daunting task.
Yeah, well, it puts a lot more accountability on you. And it happens in the greater social scheme of what is overweight socially wherever you live and what is normal weight. But it also happens, I think, a lot for girls especially, is within your group of friends. I mean, it tends to be that with every group of friends, there's the people that are all on the same level of weight or attractiveness. There's the one or two that really stick out. Every group has its really pretty girl, and every group has the girl that, you know, is the biggest of the group, because no matter what, there's always going to be one person that is the biggest. And I know that my social group when I was in high school or even early university, I mean, I felt that I was the biggest girl in my group, especially in high school. I don't know why, but I hung out with a lot of very, very thin girls. And because of that, you always feel like I was always justifying myself about why I was the biggest one. And of course, for me, it always came back to sports. Oh, well, at least I'm stronger, at least I'm faster. But in that group, all of a sudden then, you know, you can become the average girl. You can become the one that blends in with your group of friends, fits in with your group of friends. But then all of a sudden, you have to, it's an extra step to say, okay, am I going to be the prettiest one or the thinnest one, the best in shape of my group of friends? And that's a different kind of accountability, just like John was just talking about, because it's a different role to play, even within your friend circle. I mean, and we talked about how your weight loss team can sabotage you before, and when you start to sort of move up the ranks of your friends, this sounds awful, by the way, and I'm sorry, but this is how it works, and you ladies will understand that this is how it works. When you start to become more attractive than some of your friends, when they used to view themselves as more attractive than you, that poses a threat to them, and it's a difficult step to make sometimes, especially within a group of girls, because they're so highly competitive with each other. So you have to be ready for a little bit of pushback, and that might be also one of the psychological reasons why that last couple of pounds or becoming the hot girl in your group of friends is so difficult.
And correct, I'm assuming even if this happens at all stages of life too, so even if the relative group, some people are married, some people aren't, there's still some of that competition between women?
Yeah, absolutely. It all comes back to, at the base of it all, I feel like it still functions like a high school clique. I mean, maybe I'm not old enough to have enough perspective, but I do have a lot of older friends, and I hang out with in a group that has a lot of older people in it. And it just seems as though...
Hey, let's qualify that. Older than you.
Older than me.
Yeah.
And within every group, it doesn't matter if you're single or attached or married or have children. Women still compete with each other, and it's a social competition. It has nothing necessarily to do with attracting another mate. I mean, it might have some basis in that biologically, and I'm sure it does, but even if socially that's not what women are looking for, there's still a competition amongst women. And I know that that's not necessarily the same to men, so I understand that might be a bit foreign to the males that might listen to this or that you deal with, John.
Yeah, no, and that's why it's a bit of an eye opener for me because, and you've kind of explained some of this to me, and then I kind of try to pay attention to it with girls, and I talk to other girls about it, and it seems relatively consistent, and that's an underlying thread, and that's one thing as guys we just don't quite get is that competition from woman to woman. So I'll openly admit that if I'm not constantly being reminded of that, I just forget that girls are kind of that competitive. And you always mention to me like little remarks girls make and stuff. And it just surprises me because guys kind of don't do that. So, I'll just admit right now that I'm not quite, it's not my default mode to recognize that girls compete with each other like that. So, but I mean, the reminders help, but that doesn't mean that I don't understand the concept of sabotage point because you and I both have hit one and it's more or less for the same reason. And it's because socially, clothes can hide the next level of leanness of quote getting in shape. And, you know, unless you spend all your days working in a bathing suit or a bikini or, you know, around a pool, no one's ever, I mean, 99% of the time, no one's going to know if you've gotten that last 2 or 3 pounds off or not. So it's just difficult to push it that much further, but that's the difference between, at least for this contest, that's the difference probably between winning and losing the contest is getting through that point and continue going. So I'm 100% aware that that point exists, and I get the fact that it may manifest for various reasons, one of them being, like you said, and like we've discussed, blending into the crowd from before, and then do you want to take it the next step to refocusing attention on yourself as being in better shape than everyone else? And on the guy side, it's the once it stops showing through your clothes, it's well, how much, what difference is it going to make? Like over the past year, I made a change, and people have seen my pictures, but in clothes, I didn't look any different. And no one would really know, like you wouldn't know that I was actually dieting pretty hard for a couple of months. You just can't really tell unless I had my shirt off, and then you're like, oh yeah, of course something's changed. But for almost 8 weeks, I was working towards something that actually no one would have noticed. And which is interesting because some people are like, what are you dieting for? I've been coaching somebody on weight loss who's come down from almost 290 pounds down to about 205, and this person still has a bit to go. But I would eat with them a lot, and I would kind of be watching my calories along with them. And he's looking at me going, what do you have to do? Like, why are you dieting? And, you know, to him, it's almost absurd that I'm still trying to do something. Because in clothes, he can't tell that I have anything else left to do where he's, you know, obviously comparing himself to me. And this also comes back to not comparing yourself to others. If your goal is your VI, you can't let somebody else look at you and go, oh, you look fine. Because, it doesn't mean you don't look fine already, but it's your goal, not theirs. And they're always comparing themselves to you. And one of the biggest things here is to try to not compare yourself to others. I know that's easier said than done, but it's really what's going to define if you get as far as you want to go. And Ali, I like what you were saying before, bring up the concept of sort of tricking yourself into thinking the former fat kid inside you isn't there anymore, and that you're now magically someone who doesn't have to worry about eating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm painting a bad picture of women. I mean, we all have wonderful women in our life, us girls I'm speaking about, that we can support each other and we can be happy for each other. But that doesn't mean that even when you're best friend and you're honestly, truly happy for her, that she's in a body that she likes, a part of you, if she surpasses you, still dies a little inside. And I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but it's, and you can still be happy for people and still also be jealous. And I think that that's part of how we work with even our best girlfriends. And what John was touching on is that, I mean, clearly I had weight to lose. Clearly I gain weight if I don't train myself to control my food and sort of always be planning my food, and that's how I can lose weight and stay in control of my body. I've mentioned before that my brother and my mother are both people that just, they eat until they're full and then they stop, and they're never, my brother's been six-pack ripped his entire life. And I tricked myself into believing I was one of those people because I had gotten to a point where I looked like one of those girls. And because I follow an anything goes diet type eating, I'm always eating things that people don't associate with people who are in shape. So I was eating all this quote unquote junk food, and I was in shape, and I lost weight, and I was staying in shape. And I kind of convinced myself that I was one of those people that could just eat whatever and I would just be fine and I would know when to stop. And I forgot that there's this huge, enormous fat girl inside of me that is just dying to get out and play the all-you-can-eat buffet game. And I completely, it's almost like I tricked myself into believing that that person inside of me didn't exist and that I didn't have those eating tendencies. Although, clearly, they're there. Because otherwise I never would have been overweight in the first place. And I truly believe that you can't take that out of yourself. You can't just become one of those people that knows how to eat properly and never has to think about it. If you had to think about it to lose weight, if you were overweight and you had to think about it, you're always going to have to think about it. But it's about having a technique or a style like Eat Stop Eat or Anything Goes Diet that allows you to minimize it in the back of your head. But it doesn't mean that you're ever going to just be able to stuff your face and stop at your BMR.
Yeah, the experiment was the rest of your life up until now. That was the experiment that taught, that shows clearly that we're, you know, you and me and whoever else is part of what makes us up, we need to lose weight. That's the proof that we're the type of people who, left to our own devices without thinking about it, will tend to gain weight just because we'll always eat a bit more than we need. Now, we all gain at different rates. We all have different reasons why we might eat more. But in general, our lives that led us to being overweight prove to us we're the type of people who that's something to deal with. And then the people you've seen, you know, that you've lived, you know, friends of yours, family members who never gain weight, like your brother, it's obvious that that will never be an issue for them because for some reason food isn't a medicine to them. It's not a stress thing. It's not something that's an issue for them. So you just can't magically flip your life to be one of them. You've already got proof that you're the type of person who, left to your own devices, will likely eat at some rate more than you need. And knowing that, that's why, you know, that's why you're listening to this right now. That's why we think about these things. That's why we're trying to come up with techniques to lose weight and keep it off. But at the same time, try to make the effort as minimal as possible. And that's what ESE and AGD were all about, was trying to find a way to make that as simple as possible. And this is the concept of the yo-yo diet, I think, like when people like lose weight and gain it all back, I think it's because people, like Ali said, don't want to admit that that's still the fat kid inside them, still inside them. And they kind of, if left back to their own devices, will eventually just start eating their way back up to their previous, maybe not all the way back up, but some of that tendency is always going to be there. So I'm not saying you need to diet for the rest of your life as much as a little bit of mind space needs to be given to the concept of, you know, keeping your weight in control somewhere along the line. So I'm coming up with a new concept of mini diets and micro diets, and the once you've lost the weight, how to keep it off. And to me, it's something to do with partitioning a certain amount of time to active weight loss, because the time that you're not actively trying to lose weight, you may be slowly, very slowly gaining it. So if you can throw in little checks and balances to stop that from happening, then that may be the simplest way to keep it off, which is kind of what Eat Stop Eat is. If you'd imagine that for 5 days a week, without really thinking about it, you're going to slowly overeat. Not a lot, but just kind of overeat. Well, adding in the two fast days is sort of a simple simple way to hold yourself in balance, to be like, well, you know, left to your own devices, over 5 days, you might gain a pound, maybe a pound, half a pound. But if you just throw in too fast, you'll knock it off. So that's sort of the simplest, most painless way to keep it down. But if fasting's not your style, then, you know, what we do with AGD might be another way around it. Be like, well, you know, if over the course of the week I want to eat a little bit more on the weekends, and I know I will, then keep it tighter or lower for a few days during the week, and then that's your way of managing just who you are. Now, clearly, for people who've never gained weight, none of this matters. But we don't care what they're doing. It matters for us how to manage it. So to me, that's where the maintenance comes along. And if you end up doing what Allie did and just sort of be like, oh, you know, I don't have to worry about this anymore, because you get the social feedback and it can creep up on you. You know, oh yeah, every now and then I still have to keep this in control.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you and I have talked about, John, is that when we're losing weight, we all learn how to lose weight. We learn the eating pattern to lose a pound a week, for instance. And you learn how to retweak your diet and your exercise so that you're 500 calories down every single day. But then once you get really close, or even when we get there to where we're photo shoot ready, but we've spent the last 12 weeks or 6 months or a year dieting, depending on where you started and how fast you were losing, you realize that you never actually learned how to eat at maintenance. You still haven't done that. And think of all the, when you first start dieting and the tweaks, the challenges, the up and downs, the successes and failures of learning what you need to do to diet to lose a pound a week. I think that is also a learning process that you have to go through to learn how to eat at maintenance. And people think that they've done all their dieting work, but they still actually haven't learned how to maintain weight. All they've learned how to do is lose weight and gain weight, because they were gaining weight before, and that was their old eating pattern, and they learned how to lose weight. And even if you did it really successfully and you had a great plan for losing weight, that plan does not necessarily work for maintaining weight, because you might get that feeling of being in the deficit all the time, but you can't, clearly it's unsustainable. And you hit a point where you're like, I don't need to diet anymore because I've hit my goal. So I think once you get to the bottom, there is going to be, again, another process of success and failure and trial and error to find what works for you to maintain weight. And that might, I mean, John, I'll get into this more, again, I suppose at a later date, about whether it is you use Eat, Stop, Eat, and you think on a monthly scale or a weekly scale or a biweekly scale, whatever it is that you're doing. But we can't assume that we're just going to eat to our exact expenditure every single day and that we're just going to maintain weight every single day. That's completely absurd. So we have to find a pattern of eating on some sort of time scale that's going to allow us to maintain our weight without ever gaining weight to the point where we're unhappy. So it's going to be a fluctuation of a couple of pounds here and there, or even half a pound here and there. But that's going to take some trial and error for you to find a maintenance-style diet that's going to work with your lifestyle, with your job, with your responsibilities, with the social events you like to go to. And it's just as much to me of a learning process, and it has been as much of a learning process since December when I did my photo shoot as learning how to lose weight.
Mm-hmm. And one of the major things of learning it isn't, it's not calories in and out anymore. I mean, obviously, if you've lost weight, you've already gone through the exercise of kind of figuring out what your metabolic rate is and how you can eat. I think the learning process at the maintenance is almost entirely a psychosocial thing. It's how do you deal with the feedback now? How do you deal with, like you said, you almost started to tell yourself that, oh, I can eat whatever I want now, and pretend that it's you're going to stay there without any attention to it at all. And so some of it's dealing with the feedback and the new position you're in and how people react to you. So it's relearning your sort of new social, I don't know, influence or position or the feedback you're getting. It's relearning how to eat in that, with that feedback. Obviously, you know how many calories it would take. So then at that point, it's you versus the new you. It's like how you used to eat, then how you ate during weight loss, and now how do you feel about how you want to eat now? And part of it is there's actually a lack of incentive. There's less drive to get – there's no – it's because once you get there, I mean, you're looking at yourself in the mirror. You're like, man, that looks good. There's nowhere to go. There's not, what are you going to get, even leaner? Like, once you get to your numbers, you're there. So it's not like you're uncomfortable where you are. Where you are is good. So, because when you're bigger or when you're not quite happy yet, that's sort of like something poking you to move. It's like, no, I don't want to be here. And there's like it's like having a burr in your sock or whatever. It's you want to leave where you are and go to somewhere else, which is leaner. But once you're where you want to be, you don't have anything poking you and annoying you and bugging you to be, and you don't have a reminder in the mirror that, oh, you don't want to be here. You're there. So it's almost like the the uncomfortableness of not being where you are, or not being where you want to be, has been removed. So once you're there, it's not as painful, I guess. Am I making sense here? Like, there's nothing that feels uncomfortable enough to make you want to do something.
Which is difficult because maintenance still requires a little bit of mental effort and it still requires a little bit of work, but you have much less even internal personal motivation to do anything because you're happy with how you look. I mean, the one thing that you can do is post a before picture, and I don't suggest that you post a before picture when you were 100 pounds earlier or 50 pounds earlier or even your heaviest that you've ever been, because then it seems like every place under that is still a quote-unquote success. Post a picture, or keep a picture around that's, say, 5 pounds off where you are at your, when you get to your absolute leanest and you're really happy with how you look. Find a picture of how you looked 5 pounds before and kind of keep it around and know. And then you can kind of get an idea of like, okay, I don't want to become that girl that's 5 pounds heavier. Not that girl that I was that was 50 pounds or 100 pounds or 25 pounds heavier. I don't want to go 5 pounds up. It's about getting those fluctuations down to a much more manageable level, because I think that's what happens to a lot of the people that yo-yo diet. I have one girlfriend that's done that, and she's constantly gaining and losing 25 or 30 pounds. Like, it must be exhausting. But to her, she'll lose 30 pounds and gain, 25 of it back or 20 of it back, but she's still happy, or not happy, but she can still justify it because she didn't gain all of it back. But had she set her goal as when she got to the bottom and said, I'm never going to become the girl that was 5 pounds heavier, not I'm never going to become the girl that was 30 pounds heavier, then you get those fluctuations down. But those are, you have to search out those own motivations for you, because you're going to feel less of that tug, less of that social tug, and less of that own looking in the mirror motivation, even though maintenance still takes a little bit of work. So that's why I think it's a very difficult stage to be in, is maintenance.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this, and we view it as a sine wave, like just a constant up and down, but trying to make the ups and the downs as small as possible. So if you look at your entire life, and if you've yo-yo dieted before and it's happened over the span of 10 years, your ups and downs could be as big as 50, 60 pounds, and as long as years. Like, you've spent 2 or 3 years gaining 50 pounds and then half a year taking it off, and then another 2 or 3 more years gaining 30 or 40. Like you said, your friend does it. So how the fluctuation itself is large. It's 50, 60, 40, whatever pounds. And the time it takes to put it on and take it off is also long. It's on the scale of years, if not like most of a year, to take it off. And then our concept here is to shorten to shrink down the fluctuation and shorten the time it takes to do it. So once you get to a weight range you're happy with, or you get all the way to your numbers, then the idea is, maybe you, what my concept for a mini diet is, you spend 1 week a month actually paying attention and try to stay on track with cutting your calories. And then you can spend the other 3 weeks of the month just kind of eating however you eat. And at least that way you're only actually actively doing any work for your diet only 25% of the time. That sounds like a lot better than all the time. And to me, that's like, okay, so you can kind of loosen up for 3 weeks, then tighten up for a week. And then if that's the most comfortable way to, quote, maintain your size, then that might be your new maintenance pattern. And I view Eat Stop Eat as what I would call a micro diet, where instead of eating sort of just regular for 3 weeks and then dieting for a week each month, Eat Stop Eat, it's like it shrinks it down to even in within a week. It'd be like, okay, eat normal for 2 or 3 days, diet for 1 day. Eat normal for 2 or 3 more days, diet for 1 day. And then that way, you're always on top of it. So even in those 2 or 3 days, if you tend to be overeating, the ESE day just takes it right back off. So, but if some people that's not their style, then they can readjust, or even just, you don't even have to fast. It could be the concept. A couple of the guys who've placed in our competition, their new eating pattern is they consider during the week is their eat low, and then on the weekends they just eat whatever they want, and that works fine for them. There's some active role there. It's not just, okay, now that I'm at this weight, I never think about food again. They've recognized the fact that to get there took some effort. Now that they're there, there's this new different style of effort at some other level. It's obviously not as intense as a straight 12-week diet, but it's I'm even toying with the concept of dieting every year for 12 weeks, no matter how you split up those 84 days. So they could literally be eat, stop, eat style, where it's sort of 1 or 2 days a week throughout the entire year are technically a diet day. Or you could just take one week of each month and make that your diet week for that month. Or you could diet for a month at a time, three times a year, and just in divided chunks, or do it with a contest. It's just three in a row, 3 months in a row. The 3 months in a row is in order to take quite a bit of weight off, but after it's off, it probably makes sense that you could literally spread it around, literally take the 84 days and just by the end of the year commit to 84 days of some kind of active weight calorie restriction for weight maintenance. And viewing it that way, it's still only 25% of your total time, and it's likely the way you'll always be able to maintain within a very, very close range of your final sort of target goal weight.
One thing I really like about the idea of your mini and micro diets on the smaller time scale, because like we've talked about, like you just said, we're trying to make that sine curve happen over less time, is that I've seen a couple threads about this in the forum, and I totally relate to this, is that food's always on our mind. It's always tempting us. It's always there. Our weight seems to always be right in front of us and on our mind. And a lot of us, I've had this feeling where I was like, am I ever going to be able to just not think about this anymore? This is exhausting. I just want to be able to just not, can't I ever get food off my mind? And I think, unfortunately, the answer is you can never, unless you're one of those people that's never gained weight, in which case you're not listening to this, that it's about minimizing it. So if you get yourself into a weekly pattern or a monthly pattern that you're comfortable with, for instance, eating low on weekdays and then letting your weekends be a little freer, at least that's a pattern. And it's sort of like getting up to go to work. Sometimes those at first early mornings will kill you if you all of a sudden have to start a couple of hours earlier at work. But then you get used to it. It becomes part of your routine. And even though you might get twinges of thinking about it and being like, ah, this sucks every now and again, it's going to become part of your living style, and you'll think about it less. So I think trying to forget about it completely is not the answer, but instead just trying to minimize how much of a role thinking about food plays in your life. I always like to parallel food and calories and eating to money. A lot of people say, oh, well, can't I just make enough money or, lose enough weight that I never have to think about weight again, or make so much money that I never have to think about money again? But John and I have talked about this too. There's lots of, whatever percentage of pro athletes are broke the year that they stop playing, even though they make millions upon millions of dollars. If you never learn how to manage that money, just like if you never learn how to manage your calories, it doesn't matter how much weight you lose or how much money you make. If you don't learn how to manage it and find a plan for it to fit into your lifestyle and understand where it's going and what it does to you, you'll never be safe, quote unquote, safe from it, unless you do that work to find the sustainable eating pattern. And that's going to take a little bit of work, but the headspace that it takes up it'll occupy less and less of your headspace over time, but I can't say that it'll ever go away. And if you just let it go completely, like I've had the tendency to do, granted, I only ever gained a half a pound or a pound when I just decided to forget that I was a giant fat girl inside. You can't just completely forget about it, because you'll gain weight right away. So you have to just find ways to minimize how much headspace it takes up and find a way for it to fit in your lifestyle. But that's going to also take some effort. You can't just, when you're done and you're at your Venus and you take your photo shoot, that's not the end, unfortunately. But that doesn't mean that it's not a start to a really new and fantastic phase of your life.
Yeah, it's a bit unrealistic or naive to just think it's over and you never think about it again. The money analogy is the same. You can't just... you don't just turn your finances over to someone else and say, make me rich. That's completely ridiculous. So it's something, and this is your body. It's the rest of your life. If you actually think the look and shape of your body isn't even worth the effort, then I would just question your commitment to yourself at all anyways. If you just think, I only want to put in 12 weeks of effort and then it's over. So that's you and your commitment to yourself. If you actually think it's just a couple of months of your life and then it's done, you're kind of, you also probably want a unicorn too. So it's just, that's kind of unrealistic. Same in the budget analogies, but if you actually think you can get your money situation sorted out in a couple of months and then it's over, and then you're like, yeah, and you're set for the rest of your life, that's also ridiculous. So
and
it's,
you never
if
have
you,
to learn about it again.
Yeah, not learning about it, not functioning over time. Like, you know, things change over time. Your life pattern will change over time. Maybe, you know, people who have, I don't have kids, but people who have kids, all of a sudden the new challenge is when they eat, when they're feeding their kids, they tend to snack on their kids' food, and that's a whole new thing. So as your life changes, how you, the food you're exposed to and the eating situations you're, that'll change too. So, and the proof that we're the type of people who need to pay attention to it is that we're the type, we've, in the past have gained weight, so we know we're that person. We're not Ali's brother who just is lean all the time and it's just not on his mind. And that's when you can't, now you can't compare yourself to someone like that and be like, I want to be like that. It's like, yeah, well, you know, I want to be 3 inches taller. I just can't make that happen. So there's, you can't look off to the other people who that's not one of their life challenges. You have to only deal with the way you're built. So I guess we can wrap this one up. The point is, the sabotage point is, be honest with yourself. If you feel like you're hitting a sabotage point, why do you think you're actually at it? Is it because your social feedback has gotten to the point where everything's kind of okay now and you don't see what the incentive is to move further? Is it because you've gone from having the spotlight on yourself in a less comfortable way of being a bigger, quote, bigger, and now you're sort of normal and you have to search for the motivation to go from normal to like being in really great shape. That could be one of it. It could be that in clothes, nothing's really changing, so no one notices. Maybe people in your life are like, you know, you look fine. There's nothing left for you to do. Again, all of those things are external. It's up to you to decide if how much further you want to push things, and that's the idea from going normal to exceptional. And then from there, it's, you know, we've already jumped over to the maintenance side and learning that, which, again, we want everyone to get to the point where they're happy with where they are and they're maintaining it. But that's a whole other thing to learn. And all of this is a matter of not comparing yourself to anyone else. It's you and your own goal. So if you literally just have a pound or two more to go, or you get to the point where it feels like you're comfortable where you are, but you're still not at the numbers you sort of set out as a goal, you have to kind of find the motivation to push to that. And that's going to be you versus yourself and the best people on your weight loss team. And again, some people along the way, and this has happened to the guys, they'll progress and progress and people will be on their side. And then at some point, a lot of people are just like, oh, okay, now you're just taking it too far. And so you can't let those people hold you back, because they're never going to quite understand, because they don't know what the goal was. They don't, maybe aren't familiar with the numbers and how they work. And they, you know, they're going to see you in clothes. They're going to be like, man, you look good now. I don't understand where else you're going with this. So, it gets a little tricky to go through it. And finally, it's only 12 weeks. It's just really not that long. So that's not a long commitment to yourself. So, just get through it and don't at all tell yourself that, you know, this, just because you've seemed to have hit your quote sabotage point before, that doesn't mean that it's going to get you this time. It's because it's nothing more than a collection of various feedbacks, and I'm trying to show you what they are and why it's not a real point, and nothing physiologically is changing in your body. It's just a lot of psychosocial feedback that seems to all sort of add up at one kind of body size, so to speak. So don't let it hold you back, and there's no reason why you can't keep progressing. You got anything else?
No, I think you pretty much covered it. I mean, it's all just about doing a little bit of work here and there, even just little things. For instance, say your work moves locations and all of a sudden there's your favorite snack places across the street, then you just have to find a new rule or a new way to deal with it. Do you allow it to yourself, you know, just once a day or just once a week, or you chew gum all the time at work? This is something I do, so that I don't eat the food that's available to me there. And it might just be a little thing, but there's going to be these little challenges that pop up, like John says, as your life changes here and there, and they're going to, you know, they're going to challenge you. And it's just about doing that little bit of work there to find how you're going to react to it and find a routine that's going to work for you. And that when it comes to a tipping point or a sabotage point, it's hard, because you'll reach a point where sometimes you'll say, this is better than I've ever looked, and how can I not be happy here? But at least you still might be away from your Venus, or you might be very close. And it's just about believing that you can make it, of believing in the philosophy and the numbers, and that you can look good at whatever height, whatever body type you think you have, that those numbers are there and they work. And that even though you can hit these points where you feel like you're satisfied and you stop getting social feedback, it doesn't mean that it can't get even better, and you just have to believe that you can get all the way to smoking hot at any size or any body type, any height, and that you just kind of have to believe that you can be and have that body that you've always wanted. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just knowing that you can get all the way there and not to settle for less. You deserve as much as you can possibly give yourself. And don't settle for a body that's not all the way to the one that you've always dreamed of, not just the one that you think you're happy with.
Yeah, and I mean, you said it better than I can. That's just, this, I mean, all of this is the trick of the social support, and when don't let other people define what your goal is. That's always, your goal is your goal, and it doesn't matter what other people think. So, yeah, I guess we're good there. And, I guess finally, always turn to the community for the support, because no one in the community will ever hold you back. So, thanks for being on the call. We'll probably do another one sometime soon if you're up for it.
Yeah.
Okay, so for Ali Scott, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index podcast.